Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
Can't get enough baseball? Start streaming MLB Network today. Get up to 15 out-of-market games a week live on any device, plus 24/7 access to MLB Network's award-winning shows, including live game look-ins and exclusive player interviews. And hear live radio play-by-play from all 30 clubs with MLB at Bat. Enjoy the home of baseball from virtually anywhere. Plans start as low as $5.99 per month. Sign up now at MLBNetwork.com/stream. Available in the U.S. only. Blackout restriction applies. Visit MLB.com/subscribe for full terms and conditions.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Tuesday afternoon, May 27th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Memorial Day weekend was a big one at the movies. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, tariff delays, consumer confidence, and durable goods are all top of mind today. The week ahead will also include the release of the minutes from the most recent meeting of the Fed and a report on consumer spending. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park Business Line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Gus, thank you for joining us today. And as far as the numbers are concerned, Gus, it was a rather sunny start to this shortened week between the announcement that EU tariffs push down the road once again. How many times have we heard that song before? And better than expected consumer confidence numbers. So a positive start to the week.
That's right. We had seen consumer confidence fall in April to a five-year low. It bounced back in May, back close to where it was in February, so before the tariff announcement. The economy continues to do well. The administration has taken off the worst of the tariffs, and so I think that people are looking at a labor market that's in decent shape. Gasoline prices are down, so that's a positive for consumers, and things are looking better than they were a month or two ago.
Durable goods sales slumped in April, dropping 6.3%. And given the fact that the tariff announcements were made in the early part of that month, that decline should not be much of a surprise.
That's right. And we also saw a huge increase in shipments earlier in the year when people were concerned about tariffs. I think there was some effort to buy ahead of potential tariffs. And so I don't think that we should be terribly surprised. We saw big increases earlier in 2025. I think this is payback for that.
Wednesday, we have the minutes from the Fed meeting in the month of May, earlier this month. And even though we're starting to get a little bit more clarity about where the tariff policy is going to go, it seems like you're going to get page after page after page of some of the best economists in the country saying, I don't know.
That's right. I mean, you know, obviously the tariff situation changes on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. It's unclear what the impact is going to be. You know, we haven't seen much impact from tariffs on inflation yet, but I do expect that it's coming. And I think given that, the Fed is going to throw up their hands, say, look, we can't figure out what's going to happen in the near term. We're going to wait and foresee some hard evidence on what impact tariffs are having on the economy, and then we can respond to that. But for now, I think that the Fed keeps interest rates where they are, probably well into the second half of this year.
Thursday, we have pending home sales along with the weekly report on jobless claims. And pending home sales, that'll be an interesting one to watch because there were some signs of maybe a thaw occurring in the housing market, not because mortgage rates were improving by any stretch of the imagination, but after 5 years of locking in extremely low rates during COVID, life simply happens to a lot of people and they got to move on.
That's right. I mean, obviously, mortgage rates are much higher than they've been for most of the past 20 years, really. And so I think that, you know, there are going to be people who need to move, who need to go out and purchase a home. We are seeing some slower price growth in the housing market. So I think we're going to see a gradual restoration in affordability, but it's not going to be a quick turnaround. There are still some big structural problems in the housing market that need to be fixed.
Gus Fauché, Chief Economist, PNC Financial Services in Pittsburgh. Thank you for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up, two smashes propel the holiday weekend movie box office to record heights.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The premieres of Disney's Lilo and Stitch and what's said to be Tom Cruise's final Mission Impossible movie pushed the weekend box office into record territory. Let's break down the numbers with the help of Paul DeGarabedian, senior media analyst for the box office tracking company Comscore, based in Los Angeles. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And this is believed to be the best Memorial Day weekend ever in the history of the motion picture industry. And that is a remarkable turnaround from last Memorial Day weekend, which was one of the worst in recent memory.
That's right, Rob. What a difference a year makes. I mean, like, for instance, last, as you mentioned, Memorial weekend of 2024 brought in a whopping total of $132 million. And contrast that with this year, our Comscore numbers were showing an estimated, we're still compiling numbers from yesterday, but $326.7 million domestically. That's North America alone. So, wow, what a great weekend for movie theaters. But this didn't happen overnight or over a single weekend, Rob. This was built over April that was just stellar, 100% up from April of last year. A Minecraft movie, Sinners, The Accountant 2, Thunderbolts, Final Destination, Bloodlines, and now, of course, Lilo and Stitch and Mission Impossible.
Now, I was a part of the Lilo and Stitch tally yesterday, Paul. We went, the whole family went to a movie theater northwest of Chicago. And what was remarkable to me was this was a Monday evening showing. At the end of the holiday weekend, normally you would expect the interest to have run its course by then, but 6 o'clock on a Monday night at the end of a 3-day weekend, There was a line at the concession stand. There was a line to get in. So that Lilo and Stitch showing was well attended. So clearly, not only are people seeing this, but in some cases, they're seeing it again.
Well, it's amazing that you're talking about the Monday gross because I have the numbers in front of me. So on Memorial Day yesterday, Lilo and Stitch delivered one of the highest grossing domestic Mondays in industry history. We did not have a case of the Mondays, as we talk about in Office Space, one of my favorite movies. We had a great Monday. So Black Panther did 40.2 million. Star Wars The Force Awakens, 40.1 million. Spider-Man No Way Home on a Monday, 37.1 million. Lilo and Stitch, $37 million on Monday alone. That's a huge number for a Monday. And you did your own on-the-ground research, Rob. I love that.
Now, I feel like we're neglecting Mission Impossible, but the box office for Mission Impossible, I mean, obviously, it's just a spectacle, and it's amazing that this movie franchise is still going strong nearly 30 years after the first one was released in 1996 and almost 60 years after it premiered on CBS as a television show. But this seems to be a part of Tom Cruise's hard sell, as he's like reinventing himself as the president of movies, as someone who is an evangelist for the movie theater experience. At the premiere, you see him chatting up the movie theater employees, you know, thank you for bringing the magic of the movies to the people. And it seems like the success of Mission Impossible is also kind of keys off of just the sell job that Tom Cruise is able to bring to every movie.
Yeah, and he's relentless. I mean, just if you look at him, the way he runs in the Mission Impossible movies, and he's sort of like that when he's marketing his films. And remember, he's a producer on these films as well, so he's got a vested interest. And you're right, he's literally been everywhere, and he is like this great ambassador for the movie theater experience, much like Christopher Nolan and others who are really all about that big screen experience. So theater owners are I mean, there's probably a statue to Tom Cruise in every movie theater lobby. If not, there should be, because he really is pushing that. And that star power wattage that he has, the stunts, the mystique that he's built around that, the movie is, you know, if you had to pay 50 cents an hour or a minute, it would be very expensive, I should say, to see that movie. There's so much packed into those almost 3 hours of Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, an amazing experience.
Now, this sets up probably, hopefully, the momentum will continue throughout the summer, because I saw all of the blockbuster trailers ahead of Lilo and Stitch, and I do feel like the general public may be sleeping on a movie that will be released at the end of September, and that is the Gabby's Dollhouse movie, which, of course, is a monster on streaming. And I would imagine a lot of parents are taking their young children to see Gabby's Dollhouse when it's released at the end of September.
Well, think about that. All the people that you saw in the movie theater, the more people that are in a movie theater, you have more people being exposed to the in-theater marketing posters, one sheets, if you will, trailers. And that gets them excited for films like Karate Kid Legends, Ballerina, The Phoenician Scheme, How to Train Your Dragon, Megan 2.0, F1, Jurassic World Rebirth, Superman. I could go on and on. Great movies all the way through August. You know, August is sometimes called the dog days, but it certainly isn't this year with The Naked Gun, which looks really quite funny. If you haven't seen the trailer, Bad Guys 2, Freakier Friday, Weapons, Nobody 2, Caught Stealing in the Roses, that's August. And then you have Fantastic Four at the end of July. It's just, I mean, there may be just too, it's a champagne problem. There may just be too many great movies out there. And I'm not just saying that. That's not false enthusiasm or fake enthusiasm. If you look at those trailers and you look at what's coming and you see Crypto the Superdog in that Superman trailer, man, you're all in. It looks amazing for movies all the way through Labor Day Monday.
Paul DeGarabedian, Senior Media Analyst for the box office tracking company ComScore. Thank you for joining us today.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, and Southwest Airlines is eliminating one of its most popular and advertised perks. Let's get the details from Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher of JoeSentMe.com, based in New York. Joe, thank you for joining us today. And I think you said it when this policy was announced a couple of months ago, and a number of people have echoed that sense, and that is doing away with Bags Fly Free, which will be done away with officially tomorrow, and then implementing assigned seating turns Southwest into just another airline.
Indeed, and that's part of the problem that doesn't show up on anybody's spreadsheet. I mean, all these changes that Southwest is imposing are being driven from an outside source, a hedge fund that has essentially taken control of Southwest, although the talking heads remain the same at the top of the C-suite. I'll give you a sense of how chaotic it's actually been. The policy to charge for bags goes into effect tomorrow. As of right this moment, you cannot find what Southwest will be charging for a bag on its website. It will be $35, but they haven't bothered to tell anybody that. And I think that's a kind of crystallization of both their operational problems and their emotional and branding problems.
What happens then once these two policies are put into effect? Once the bag fees are imposed, once the assigned seating goes into place, what does Southwest have going for it that the competition does not? I mean, outside of the fact that if you live on the south side or maybe in the Southwest suburbs, Midway is just easier to get to compared to O'Hare.
Well, you've just capsulized what it means for Chicagoland flyers. If you're closer to Midway and they fly there, and all things being equal, you'll fly Southwest. But if you're closer to the northern suburbs in O'Hare or the northern part of town, you might opt for United or American now, because there literally is no difference between United, American, and Southwest. They can claim, you know, their culture is better. But, you know, culture is very much about the people you get on one particular flight. And there's nothing that says that Southwest crew on one flight will be better than an American Airlines crew or a United Airlines crew. So Southwest right now has nothing to sell itself as a differentiation point.
Now, this is a conversation that could last an hour or two, but in the history of the airline industry, Southwest probably did more than any other carrier to bring air travel to the masses, especially in the 80s as deregulation took hold and flights got cheaper. So now that Southwest is an American or a United, essentially, operationally speaking, who is there for the budget traveler, for the person who maybe flies once or twice a year?
Well, I think the problem, Rob, and you're certainly right, Southwest was so famous, it had an effect named after it. The DOT, the Transportation Department, literally called it the Southwest effect, where when Southwest entered a market, fares dropped. Now it's catch as catch can. And what I would recommend to travelers, whether they travel every day for business or once a year for leisure, is to compare the total cost of flying, because the fare means nothing now, because it doesn't include the boarding charge, the seat charge, any luggage you might check. So you need to look at the total cost of flying now, not just the advertised or publicly available fare.
Joe Brancatelli, editor and publisher, joesentme.com in New York.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. Markets are higher today. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley Financial, based in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. You didn't have to be, well, quite frankly, you didn't have to be Art Hogan to know that chances are the latest tariff threat on Europe that was imposed a couple of weeks ago would be kicked down the road, resulting in what is amounting to a relief rally today.
Right. We certainly seem to be developing a pattern here, Rob. threaten the worst and then pull that back and have some sort of sensible counter. And that's been going on since March. You know, we rolled out the first week of March, 25% tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and China. That got rolled back except for China. And then chaotic release of reciprocal tariffs on April 2nd. 5 days later, that gets rolled back to a 90-day negotiating period. We announced a couple of deals. And then, you know, I think somebody had indigestion on Friday and it seemed to take some Tums by Sunday. And we're back into the, you know, things are getting better. And that certainly was reflected in the consumer confidence number that came out this morning. I think that was a reflection of feeling a little bit more at ease with trade.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, for the last month or so, with every announcement that tariffs would be postponed or paused or that a deal was imminent, and then watching traders react to that much in the same way a cat would when chasing a laser pointer, it's also, you know, consumers feel the same way. Once the general public felt that the tariff threats would not be nearly as onerous as they were first proposed, consumers went back to their old patterns.
Yeah, well, that consumer confidence number clearly was hitting rock bottom for a couple of months. That, you know, the survey data or the soft data has been abysmal, while the hard data really hasn't reflected that yet. And there was some hope that the soft data would catch up to the hard data versus the other way around, with the hard data catching down to the soft data. So it looks like we got a bit of a bounce in consumer confidence. I think that's, you know, reflective of a better tone around trade, and certainly, you know, the possibility that the Congress may actually be able to pass a budget sometime this summer.
Now, does the bond market reflect that reality? It looks like yields were down just a tick at last check.
Yeah, we bounced off some round numbers. 4.5 is the new normal, I guess, for the 10-year. 5% are flirting with it for the 30-year. But we didn't break through. The good news is we didn't get to 4.75, which is the cycle high for the 10-year. So I think people felt a sigh of relief there. The problem with the bond market is it's a reflection of a couple of things, not the least of which not liking the new budget increasing the deficit. The other is the amount of issuance that you'd have to roll out there if you're actually going to increase that deficit and spend more money. So the bond market naturally navigated to that place, but I don't think it's a function of confidence necessarily. It's much more a function of, hey, we're spending a lot of money, so we're going to have to ask for more if we're going to lend it to you.
Tech names, I mean, obviously when the Dow is up, when the markets are up over 1% or even 2% in the case of the NASDAQ, everybody's doing well, especially tech. Tesla popped a little bit simply on stories that Elon Musk is going to back away from Washington and go back to devoting his time to his core businesses.
Yeah, I think that's a double sigh of relief for everybody, both the government side of it and the Tesla shareholder side of it. He talked about over the weekend redoubling his efforts, getting back to sleeping on the floor of conference rooms and focusing clearly on Tesla, getting back into its dominant position that it's losing some share to some of the Chinese EV makers. So I think people are relieved on both fronts.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday, sponsored by Preflight Airport Parking. More music fans are leaving the area, their state, or even the country to see their favorite artists. Let's talk about the trend with Angie Rice, co-founder of Boutique Travel Advisors, based in Scottsdale, Arizona. Find her online, travelbta.com. Angie, thank you for joining us today. And I feel like we have this discussion a couple of years ago during the Taylor Swift Eras Tour, when a number of people did the math and discovered it was probably cheaper or about the same to turn that Taylor Swift Eras Tour trip into a 3 or 4 day jaunt overseas as opposed to going to see them in Indianapolis for the same amount of money.
Yes, when you did the math, that was absolutely true.
And, you know, the Taylor Swift Eras Tour is over. Beyonce is on the road right now. But if you want to have a vacation centered around going to see a concert or concerts, what are some things you need to know?
You know, it's really your style in terms of if you enjoy an entertainment and being at an event live, understanding the venue, right? Like take The Weeknd, for example. He's touring in California. He's been touring in Montreal, and the venues are quite different. You can be in a crowd with 70,000 other people in California versus in a smaller venue in Montreal with 25,000 people. So keep that in mind. When you're researching the destination, look also at the venues and determine what's more your preference.
Now, I think we talked about with Taylor Swift the reason why it was more cost effective, perhaps, to travel overseas and see her there is that other countries have some laws in place limiting ticket fees or the amounts for which tickets can be resold that don't exist in this country. So even though it's not a marquee name like a Taylor Swift, but if you want to see an American artist on the overseas leg of their tour, you could make that the centerpiece of your vacation.
You're right. How tickets are sold on the secondary market can vary. And then you even have concerts like Bad Bunny is performing in Puerto Rico. And I believe that there might be a concert that he's putting on where it's essentially for Puerto Rican residents. So understanding, you know, that there are different ways to see a venue in a different market. Similarly, when Taylor Swift was performing in big markets like London and Paris, but she also did smaller venues like Lyons in France, which you can find, you know, that might be an easier destination, not just for your ticket and being able to maybe get better seats, but also for the pricing that you'll pay for accommodations.
Now, when you go overseas, or even elsewhere in the country, especially if you're talking about a music festival that may be a little off the beaten path, booking the flight could be the easiest part of setting that. Booking the flight and buying the tickets could be the easiest part of the itinerary.
I agree, because you have a lot of flexibility, especially if you're going to plan a trip around it, right? Like you could do 3-4 days on the front end and the back end of the concert and work your way to where you're going to see your musician of choice. And I also think what's really, you know, important is that, you know, obviously what comes first in this instance. I probably wouldn't be buying your airfare first. I would be looking at cancelable rates for lodging and combining that with securing the tickets. And then you do have those people that just want to be around the crowd and they're willing to take their chances where they go to the destination and somehow they find their way with tickets, you know, day of. That's certainly an approach that people take both for music as well as for sporting events. Not necessarily the way I plan travel, but it certainly is an option to be vicarious and be amongst the scene in hopes that you secure those tickets on a last minute basis.
And it also seems that maybe, you know, when you research things ahead of time, also research the artist, because if you are traveling to see someone and that someone has a reputation for being a no-show or being incredibly late, that could result in ruining your vacation.
So true. And then looking for music headlines where you also enjoy the other performers is advantageous. And the country scene has really grown. For the longest time, it was more of a US-based following, but now you're seeing country expanding into Asia and into Europe. So there's more opportunities to find country western festivals in other countries as well now. So that's something to be on your radar. Another way to really, if you have a certain type of music, whether it's jazz or rock versus country, is a lot of times the cruises will do festivals on ship as well. So you can look at different themes. I know Creed and Three Doors Down, for those that like that rock music, have been touring with NCL. So look at cruises as well as a way to really enjoy music for, you know, 3 or 4 days on a sailing.
Angie Rice, co-founder, Boutique Travel Advisors in Scottsdale, Arizona. Find her online, travelbta.com. Thank you for joining us on Travel Tuesday.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Scammers are using fake customer service numbers to target victims. Let's learn more from Jerry Irvine, CIO of Prescient Solutions, member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force in Chicago. Jerry, thank you for joining us today. And if you are traveling and you're on the road and you encounter some sort of hiccup somewhere along the way, you may think you're contacting customer service, but then they want your social security number, then they want your credit card number. And in the words of Carl Malden, what do you do in that situation?
Hang up and call someone else. It's really hard to know who to talk to anymore. If you make a phone call, If you go out online and you do a search for customer service for XYZ company, more likely than not, the top responses you're going to get from the Google or any other search engine are going to be hackers, because they're paying for it right up front, and they want to grab your information to steal your personally identifiable data.
And how do the hackers manage to intercept a phone number or present you with a bogus phone number that you would call?
Well, it's really pretty easy, especially with AI today. They can go on and create these fake websites. They can advertise phone numbers and put the information out there. They can have automated systems that answer the phone, and when somebody calls, it reroutes you right to a hacker. The other problem is there are these websites out there, whether it's Yelp or even Google or your other search engines, where you go out and you complain. Well, if your user ID or if your email address or you put your Facebook name or anything, hackers get that information. Now they know you've complained about a company. They can send you a fake email and say, oh, this is customer service getting back to you on the problem we saw that you've reported. Give us a call at this phone number or send us an email and we'll contact you. So even when you think you're doing the right thing by contacting customer service, the hackers are out there to get the information. So the things to know, if they ever ask you for your credit card, they may even sound legitimate. Well, see, we need the credit card that you made the purchase with. So then you give them the credit card. Oh, okay. Or we need your social security number to identify you. Anytime they want any type of that information, just hang up, because it's not, they're never going to ask you that. A real customer service person is never going to ask you that.
Good advice, Jerry Irvine, CIO, Prescient Solutions, member of the U.S. Secret Service Electronic Crimes Task Force based in Chicago.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
At MLBShop.com, you can get all the latest officially licensed merchandise for you and your family. But if you really want to level up your game, you can grab something for your dog walker, your Pilates instructor, your swim coach, your neighbor, your accountant, your gardener, your best friend, your bandmate, your boss, your kid's teacher, your mailman. Visit MLBShop.com and stock up on officially licensed on-field merchandise from your favorite teams.
Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.